it is away, Rabbi Yehuda Saunders.
Okay, good morning. Good kvittel. So, we're going to try this morning to speak a little bit, some Divrei Torah about finishing Yom Kippur, Parshas Hazinu, and Sukkos. Maybe try and tie them in a bit as well. So, there's a story told over with a fellow who had a dream. And his dream was that he died by drowning. He drowned. And when he had this dream several times, a few nights on the run, he started getting a bit worried. And he decided, just in case, he's going to avoid water. So he decided, that's it, no more swimming pools, no more cruises, and no more boats, exactly. And he got so neurotic that he decided he's not even when it's raining, he's not going to go outside. He would avoid any puddles, and he avoided water like the plague. Just about, he drank water, just about. And this went on for 10 years. This went on for 10 years. For 10 years, he didn't go near any water. And after 10 years, he thought to himself, come on, it's been 10 years, I had a dream, this dream 10 years ago. Nothing's happened since then. You know, I think maybe I'm getting a bit, taking it a bit too far. I think I can chill out a little bit now. Okay, I can relax now. So he decided he's going to book himself a nice week-long cruise in the Caribbean. And he's going to enjoy himself. He's going to go on a ship. He hasn't been anywhere near water for 10 years. Anyway, books his tickets. He goes on the cruise ship. Beautiful day. Nice sunny day. He gets on. He's enjoying himself. 2 hours into the journey, suddenly a storm breaks out. And the storm gets worse and worse. Bit of a Maisa Yoina. And he realizes the ship they're not going to survive this. And the ship's being tossed to and fro. So he realizes that's it. His dream is now finally coming true. So he looks up to the heavens and he says, Hashem, you know, for whatever reason, this is supposed to happen to me. My dream has come true. I'm supposed to go this way. But what about all the other people on the ship? And suddenly he hears a heavenly voice calling out, I've been waiting 10 years to get you all on the same ship. So the pasuk in this week's Sedra says, Atzur Tomim Poloi. Hashem is Tzur Tomim Poloi, Kichol Drocha Mishpot, Kelem Unu Vein Ovel, Tzadik V'yoshahu. And the Mepharshim explain, Kshporcho is straight, is just. When a person comes, well known, when a person comes to a court case, then the judge takes into account the person standing in front of him. And the judge can only take into account the person standing in front of him. He can't possibly take into account all the other people who are going to get affected by his sentence. His children, his wife, his siblings, you know, other people, his work colleagues. He can't possibly, it's impossible. He has to focus on what's in front of him. Whereas when Hashem judges someone, he takes into account every single person that's going to get affected by this judgment. And Hashem will never, ever give someone more than they deserve, not less than they deserve. Anyone who gets something coming to them, it's coming to them because they deserve it. Now Rashi says on Hatzur Tomim Paloi, Rashi explains, Tzadik Varale, Rosh HaVatovle, Rashi explains that Tzadik HaKshborach who waits sometimes to pay them back in Olam Haba. He's Meshalim Socher Schar LeTzadikim Bo'olam Haba, and Rishayim get sometimes paid Bo'olam Hazeh. And the famous question that everyone asks is, how can HaKshborach who pay Rishayim Bo'olam Hazeh? Surely there's a rule, Schar Mitzvah V'ayhal Melecha. Because you can't reward someone in this world for a mitzvah that they do, because the currency is a different currency. Since a mitzvah is priceless, it's something we can't fathom the reward for it. So to get rewarded in this world doesn't make sense. It's a different currency. You can't pay back by that. So how could Baruch Hu pay back Rishon for the mitzvah that they do in this world? There's different answers. So one of the answers, a famous answer, is that it depends. All depends on how a person is machshiv a mitzvah. If a person is machshiv a mitzvah, he understands it's nitzchias. We understand when we do a mitzvah, when we learn Torah, then it's nitzchias. It's something which is not physical. It's not in this world. It's out of the realms of this world. So then, Kadosh Baruch Hu says, "Well, I can't pay you back in this world." Schar b'mitzvah b'al melecho. But someone who does a mitzvah and he doesn't really understand it, and he does it for whatever reason. But it's not. He's not machshiv it in a way that it's nitzchias and it's something which is otherworldly, something which is not payable back in this world. Because if you would give him the choice, would he want to earn another £100 or would he want to do this mitzvah? He would gladly choose the £100. And the proof is that he spends all his day working and he doesn't go to davening, he doesn't learn anything, he doesn't do mitzvahs. Instead, he spends his time doing other things which he deems more important than mitzvah. So mimela, someone who's machshiv a mitzvah in such a low state, he's only machshiv it in terms of this world, so therefore Hashem has strength, so I can pay him back in this world. Because now the currency for this is in this world, because that's how much he's machshiv the mitzvah. So it all depends on how we're machshiv a mitzvah. I see a story of Rabbi Yanka Galinsky. Rabbi Yanka Galinsky was once in, he was visiting Tel Aviv. I used to do a lot of Kirov, used to go around speaking different places. So he was once in Tel Aviv, and he finished speaking and giving a shir somewhere, and he wanted to daven Ma'ariv, and he was looking for a minyan, and they had 9 people. And it wasn't, you know, Bnei Brak or Yerushalayim or here, HMH, that you can just, you know, walk outside the door and call someone in. So there was no one around. And so he goes out and he sees a taxi driver, Israeli taxi driver, sitting in his car. So he says to him, "Can you come? You come in, you're the 10th man, please, can you come in?" And the taxi driver says, "Look, you know, I'm working here, you know, I could earn another few shekels here, you know, I'm sorry, I'm not available." So Rabbi Angeliski says, "Please, we need a 10th man." "No, I'm not available." So he says, Rabbi Angeliski has an idea. He says, "I've got Yahrzeit today." The taxi driver heard that. "Oh, Yahrzeit. That's already a different story." So he comes in, "Fine, but Yahrzeit I'll come in." Anyway, after, as Ma'ariv got on, and as Ma'ariv finished, it became quite apparent that he didn't have Yahrzeit. It was just a ploy to bring the taxi driver in. And the taxi driver got a bit upset. So Rabbi Angeliski went to him afterwards and he said to him, "Look, I'm sorry, you know, but we really needed a minion. I had to get you in somehow. But look, I'll pay you for whatever you would have earned during that time. I'll pay you." And the taxi driver seems he got a bit of a hysteria. He says, "No, I'm not giving up the mitzvah. You don't have to pay me." He says, "I'll pay you 100 shekel, 200. He says, "No, it's fine." So Rabbi Angeliski says, "Well, if you're anyway here," I think it was actually Mincha that they were davening. He says, "If you're anyway here, why don't you stay for Ma'ariv as well?" And he stayed for Ma'ariv. And after the shir, after the Ma'ariv, Rabbi Angeliski got up and he spoke very short. He said, "Just want to say that an amazing thing. This taxi driver, before this, his mincha, if he would have ever daven mincha Ma'ariv, it would be worth 5-10 shekel. That's what it's worth to him because he's not prepared to come and daven. Instead, he would prefer to earn a few shekel on a taxi, 20 shekel, whatever it was. But now that he's come and he's davened here, and I offered him 100 shekel, I offered him 200 shekel even, and he refused it, now his worth for davening, every time he davens, now the schar he's going to get is much, much, much greater. Of course, when we daven, we hope it's going to be a lot more than 200 shekel. But for someone who's holding on that level, so mimela he was meroimim his worth, the way he was machshir the tefillah, and therefore it's worth more. So the point is, it's all worth. It's the schar we get from mitzvah depends on how much we're machshir the mitzvah. So we have to be careful that we don't ever give up doing a mitzvah, learning some Torah or a shir for something which is not really worthwhile. You know, if it's to earn something here, or you know, do something else which is not really worthwhile, then we have to think: are we limiting? Are we putting a price on our mitzvahs? So the bit later on, the pasuk says, this is a connecting to Sukkos. The pasuk says, "Yisayv even who you when in Yisayv Eretz Midbar, we went through the Midbar. Yisayv Leil Shimoin, Yisayv even who you vain in Ehu, Hashem surrounded us." In the Midbar, and Rashi says, the Das Akenim says, Yisayv Evenhu is referring to the Sukkos, like Shpor Ruch made in the Midbar. So there's the connection, Hazinu into Sukkos. So moving on to Sukkos, why is Sukkos called Zaman Simchaseinu? You know, there's many other Yom Tovim, Pesach, Shavuos, which Lechero would be as fitting, if not more fitting, to call them as Zman Simchaseinu, Shavuos, Matan Torah, Pesach, Yetzias Mitzrayim. Why Sukkos specifically is called Zman Simchaseinu? And again, there are many answers. I once heard an answer, actually in this hall, quite a few years ago, from Reb Zil Rosenbaum. He came on Chol HaMoed Sukkos to speak here. And he said the following answer. He's Madaik Rambam in the end of Hilchas Sukkah. Right at the end of Hilchas Sukkah, the Rambam says that he talks about the simcha that a person should have on Sukkos, and then he finishes off with an interesting lashon. The Rambam says, "V'chol hamoneya atzmoi mi simcha zu." Anyone who stops himself from this simcha And the Rambam goes on to say, you know, he's doing something very wrong. So the interesting lashon, anyone who stops himself, surely Rambam should say, anyone who is not mesameach, anyone who doesn't join in the simcha, but Rambam says, anyone who stops himself from the simcha. So he's medayek from the Rambam that the following, that normally the natural state of a person is to be besimcha. A person is naturally besimcha. That's the way Hashem Baruch Hu made a person, is neshama. A person is naturally besimcha. So why are we not always walking around happy, besimcha? You know, we're not always like that. Why not? And the answer is because the avera is getting in the way. Our averas block our natural, automatic simcha from that we have from our neshama, and therefore we can't experience that simcha. But when we come after Yom Kippur, and we have Mechilas Havoinos, we've got a clean slate, so our neshama is bright, it's happy, it's exuberant, so therefore, unnaturally, our state is besimcha. And then as we go into Sukkos, this becomes Zman Simcha Seinu, because this is the time when we are naturally besimcha, we are most besimcha. And therefore, Peshat says at the Rambam, someone who stops himself from the simcha, which is naturally there, and there's nothing blocking it, because we've already had all the averas forgiven, so there's nothing to stop the simcha. If you're not happy, it means you're stopping yourself somehow. And if anyone who stops himself from the simcha is doing an avla. So that is why Sukkah is called Zman Simcha Seinu. Now, going into a sukkah is a very special thing. And as we know, it's one of the only mitzvahs that a person can do with his whole body, apart from mikvah, but the only mitzvah a person can do with his entire body at the same time. And the Zohar says that a sukkah protects a person from things from the outside. The Zohar compares it to the Teva of Noach. So just like the Teva of Noach protected people from the outside, so too, the sukkah is like a bit like a teva, and it protects people from the outside. Now, the Gemara in Sanhedrin says that the teva of Noach only protected people who were free from averas. Okay, so Noach and his family, I don't know about the animals, but anyone who tried to get in, who wasn't roy, wasn't allowed in, because only people who were free from averas. So, it says in the Shem Mishmuel that maybe the same thing by a sukkah. Because we're after Yom Kippur and we've had Bechilas Havoinos, we've been forgiven for all our averas, so we made a now we're roy to go into the sukkah and be protected, get its protection. And the sukkah is to remember, when we go in the sukkah, it's mamish like a tevos noyach, it's mamish like a gehoven azach. The spiesen that we say on sukkahs, it's not just a cute thing, a sweet thing, you know, we say this ritual. We're actually inviting the spiesen, Avram, Yitzchak, Yaakov, David, Amelech. Someone once asked Reb Chaim Brisker, what would happen if we saw David Amelech? What would we say to him? What would we do? What would happen? And there, apparently Reb Chaim Brisker said, if you saw David Amelech, you would immediately burn up on the spot. You wouldn't survive. David Amelech. And now we're coming into the sukkah and we're inviting a shpiz and we're inviting David into the sukkah. We're sitting there with him. That's the power of the sukkah. The kedusha of the sukkah is such that we can sit there together with the shpizin. Now, we have a special mitzvah on sukkahs, which is nisach hamayim. The whole year round we do nisach hayayim, we pour wine. And on sukkahs, we suddenly have the mitzvah of nisach hamayim as well. We also pour water. And the whole simchas pesach sheiva is built on the she'iva samayim, drawing the water that they used to use for nisach hamayim. So what is so special about nisach hamayim? What is the idea? It's just water at the end of the day. And why on sukkahs do we suddenly pour nisach? Well, do we pour water? So I saw an answer, a very nice answer, that when a person, the marshal, a person invites guests, so if he's inviting guests that he doesn't normally have, so he'll go and he'll buy nice drinks. You know, they normally have just water on Shavuos, or maybe they'll have orange juice. When they have guests, they go and they buy some extra special drinks. But if it's a guest who comes every week, you know, they have a ben bayis, someone who comes very, very often, or it's just the regulars at a Shabbos table, so Shine is not going to, you know, get anything special for them. They'll just get the regular, they're like part of the family. You don't need to, and no airs and graces. Whatever we have, we normally have. We're all family, we're all good friends anyway, so we don't need to put any special shows on. Hashem says, after Yom Kippur, we've had Mechilas Avonis, Hashem Baruch Hu says, you've come back to me, done Shuvah, we're close now. So to signify this, we're saying we don't need the extra wine. Simple water we're going to pour on the Mizbeach to show this connection that we have now with Hashem. That all we need is just water. So that's one of the ideas of Nisach HaMayim the since we're coming back to Hashem, we're close now to Hashem, we don't need to put on shows type of thing. Obviously, we do the Nisr Chayayin as well. But the idea of symbolizing that this connection we have to Hashem, so we pour just simple water. Shmuel says, just me and you, Nisr Chamayim. And then says this theme runs through the whole Sukkos of the connection to Hashem, and it even goes through to Shmini Atzeres. I heard a nice moshel of what Shmini Atzeres really is all about. And Shmini Atzeres is the Medrash says that it's one that Ikfu Yoy Mechot, stay one more day throughout the whole of Sukkos, and for his private, like a king who makes a banquet, a feast, and invites everybody, and the last day just his inside ministers. So Shmini Atzeres is the same idea. Kshporach says, one more day, just my close people, just the Yidden. So I heard a nice moshel. So there was a chosl and kala who they go on a shidduch, and they meet, and of course they've got lots to talk about, they've got a list of questions, whatever, yeah. And they go through, and then it goes well, and the second shidduch, and it's the third date, and everything's going well, plenty to talk about, and they get engaged. During the engagement period, there's plenty to do, plenty to talk about. They're constantly, you know, arranging this, and what we're going to do, where we're going to go, what we're going to have for the chasna. And the chasna comes, they get married, and they're setting up a house, then maybe they're even moving country, and whatever they're doing, so much to do. Finally, after 6 months, they're settled, they have a flat, they have the furniture, the husband is sorted what he's doing, the wife is sorted, she's got her own job, whatever, everything is sorted. 6 months, they sit down to supper, and they realize they have nothing to talk about. Nothing to talk about anymore. Everything is done. So they just sit there. Now is the real test. Do they sit there uncomfortably, awkwardly, when you need to think of something to say? Or can they just sit there and enjoy each other's company? They've got nothing particular to say. You know, all the busy stuff is all done. Now we're just sitting and we're enjoying each other's company. So the same thing Hashem says, during Sukkot, we're running, we've got to build a sukkah, sit in the sukkah, then we've got to shake our baminim, and we're running around the bimah, we're doing hakafas, hishanas, and the hishana rabbi is a busy day, you know, and everything is so busy, 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 and Shmini Atzeres suddenly nothing. No lulav, no esuk, no sukkah, in Torah, no bracha, at least, you know, nothing. What is Hashem Baruch Hu saying? Just now we're just enjoying each other's company. That's the love Hashem Baruch Hu has for Klal Yisrael, that he wants one day that without all the busy stuff, all the things, you know, just enjoying each other's company. The closest, the connection to Hashem. Okay, so I saw this interesting, this is sort of unrelated, but it's a very interesting shaila I wanted to share, which is, has an important limma, not just for Sukkos, but for generally. So there was a fellow who wanted to spend Sukkos in Eretz Yisrael. He decided, he lived in an American, someone from America, he wanted to spend Sukkot in Eretz Yisrael, but he wanted to do it in style, so he decided he wants to get rent somewhere in the old city, overlooking the Kaisel. That was his dream. So he looked around, and he managed to find perfect dira. Someone was going away for Sukkot, who lived in the old city, was going to rent their flat, and overlooking the Kaisel, beautiful, perfect. Anyway, he calls and he says, please make sure there's a Sukkot there. He could, for sure, no problem, we'll have the Sukkot all built for you. Amazing. He gets there, pays for the flat, and he spends a beautiful sukkah. Every day he wakes up in the morning, he goes, the sukkah was, there was a mirpeset, a balcony, and the whole balcony was taken up with the sukkah. He would just walk into the sukkah, and there was a window going out, looking over to the kaisel. It was amazing, it was beautiful. Anyway, after sukkah, he decides he's going to do the fellow a favor, and he'll take down the sukkah. You know, just a few boards around the balcony. He'll take it down for him, at least, you know, that be menschlich. And as he takes the sukkah down, he's in for a big shock. Because as he takes the schach off, he realizes that on top of the schach, there was a plastic sheet that the fellow had put on to protect from the rain or whatever, and forgotten to take off. And he realizes he's had this amazing sukkah in Eretz Yisrael, inspirational, uplifting, amazing, looking out of the kaisel, and it's all been for nothing. He's not done the mitzvah. There's been a plastic sheet covering the whole schach, and he's not done the mitzvah. He was so upset. Anyway, he calls up the fellow, he says, I want my money back, at least that, you know, I paid you to come and spend a sukkah in Eretz Yisrael, in a sukkah, not an apostle sukkah. So they went to a rov and they discussed it, and came out two things. Number one, he gets his money, it was a mekach tos, he does get his money back, because that's not what he paid for. He paid for a flat with a sukkah, he came specially for the sukkah, so he gets his money back. But Rabbi Yitzchak Zilberstein pointed out that there's a Ben Ish Chai. The Ben Ish Chai says that someone who wanted to do a mitzvah, and he did the mitzvah according to his as far as he knew, as best as he could. And it turns out in the end that Itako, he was not yotze the mitzvah. For example, he says someone who buys a pair of tefillin from a moicha, from a sofer who's a Yirei Shamayim, and he buys a pair of tefillin. 6 months later, he gets them checked, and he finds there's a word missing. The whole tefillin is possible. And comes out, the chayra, he's not been yotze his mitzvah for the past 6 months. Says the Ben Ishchai, no. He's got the mitzvah, he's been yotze his mitzvah since he did what he could. As far as he knew, he was doing the mitzvah, he was an oinus. So therefore, and he was doing it the best as he could, it wasn't his fault. Therefore, he gets the schar of the mitzvah, nonetheless. So the same thing over here. He says he gets the mitzvah, and he gets the schar of the mitzvah, but he still gets his money back, because lemaisa, that's not what he paid for. That's not, you know, he paid for a sukkah which was real. So therefore, he gets the best of both worlds.
Because you've seen them.
No, so that's the thing. So it was covering the whole mirpet, the whole balcony. You walk out into the balcony and that's it. There was no way to see around the sides. It's still yet to the sukkah, why? Yeah. Yeah, okay. We don't pass on that, but okay. So I just want to finish off with this amazing story which I read recently, which ties back into what we said at the beginning. Hatzur Tomim Paloi. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu is just, HaKadosh Baruch Hu does everything for a reason, everything is exact, and sometimes we don't understand why things happen. And sometimes we'll never understand, as we know, but sometimes things come clear. So there was a fellow who lived in, we'll call him Yitzchak, he lived in Manhattan. Now Yitzchak had, over the last few years, was becoming from, and this was the first year he decided he's going to build a sukkah. He'd never built a sukkah before. He's, you know, fresh Baal Shuvah, and he wants to build a sukkah, but he lives in Manhattan on the second floor of a 20-floor building. How is he going to build a sukkah? No balconies. So he goes downstairs, he has a look around, and outside there's like a courtyard, and big, nice big area, and he thinks, look, I'll take a small corner there of the courtyard, no one's going to even notice me, and I'll build my sukkah there. So he spends 2 days getting all the materials, building it, comes finished, beautiful. And he's just putting the finishing touches on, when suddenly he looks up, and there's two policemen come over, and they say, I'm sorry, we had a complaint that there's an illegal building being erected here. You need to take it down immediately. So he said, can I at least take it down in 7 days? So he said, no, it needs to go down right now. So he pleaded with them, nothing doing. You put a building, you erected something illegally without permission on the property, you've got to take it down. So, Shane, what should he do? Painfully and crying, he takes down his sukkah, which he spent 2 days building, he takes it down. But I mean, more upset that, what's he going to do for a sukkah? So he thinks to himself, the only way I can build a sukkah legally is if I build it on the roof of my building, 20 floors up. So he decides he's got to find out who owns it. So he finds out that the fellow on the top floor owns the penthouse, and on top of that, he owns the roof. So Shaitan, he goes up to the guy, knocks on the door, and he says, I'd like to rent your roof. I don't need the whole roof. I just need a small area. 2 meters by 2 meters is enough. Can I rent the roof? So he says, sure, no problem. Oh, Baruch Hashem, you know, as simple as that. He says, but I'm a businessman, and everything has to be done properly. So we'll draw up a contract. So he says, we need a contract. I just need 2 meters by 2 meters on your roof. You know, you want it or not? It needs to be done properly. Okay, fine. Let's draw up a contract. Come on, let's get on with it. So he says, wow, I can't just draw a contract here. We've got to go to the lawyers. You know, we'll go to the solicitor. He'll draw up the contract. And tomorrow afternoon, you meet me there. And he says, what, in the middle of Manhattan? A lawyer, how much that's going to cost me? So he finds out. He says to him, and it's going to, to rent the roof for a week is going to cost you $700. $700? That's almost what I pay for a whole month, for my whole flat. I pay almost that. You want me to pay for 1 week for a small area on the roof? He goes, these are the terms. Do you want them or not? So he thinks, for a mitzvah, yeah, my first sukkah, I'm going to do it. So he pays him $700. He goes the next day to the lawyer. He's got to pay another $300 just for the signing the contract. And he sees, look, it's worth it. It's fine. At least I'll have my sukkah. Anyway, he gets the keys to the roof. He goes up. He opens the door. He looks around. The roof is full of rubbish, of storage and old stuff and pipes and this and that. He thinks to himself, this fellow is... He's really kind of, he's really got himself a good deal here. Anyway, he doesn't think about it too much. This is what I'm supposed to be doing. This is my mitzvah. I'm going to build a sukkah here. Anyway, he starts moving stuff around, to get an area. And as he's moving, when a big, this like pipe, suddenly something falls out. And he looks, it's like a package, seems to be packaged very carefully, very securely. So he's wondering, you know, there's all this rubbish on the roof. This looks like an important package. I wonder what it is. So he goes, he picks it up, and he decides he's going to open it. So he opens it up, and he sees inside a whole, yeah, some jewels, some diamonds, whatever it was. So we're worth a lot of money. And he thinks to himself, okay, well, he was a good man, a very honest person. I've got to turn it in. Someone's obviously lost it. So he goes to the police station. He gives it and he says, look, this is, I found this. I'd like to turn it in. He said, fine, leave it with us. We'll see what we can do. Anyway, he builds a sukkah, has a 7 days, beautiful sukkahs. He spent a lot of money on it. He worked really hard. The second sukkah he's built. But Baruch Hashem, it's worth it. He enjoys himself. Amazing. He doesn't even think about anything else. And that's it. Motzi Simchas Torah, he gets a call from the police station. They said, can you come down to the police station? We'd like to talk to you. Comes down. And they said to him, look, we found out that there was someone who lost these precious stones. And we looked into it. And basically, there was a jeweler who was robbed on the, you know, around the, on the street somewhere. On the high street, and the Ganav took these things, and somehow it seems he stashed it somewhere and it was taken, whatever, it ended up on this roof. So when we found out, we looked into it, who is this, who is the shopkeeper? Turns out, he died last week, and he's got no known relatives, and therefore the state of New York says that it now belongs to you, find his keepers. Say, amazing, wow, you know, after all this I've done, you know, finally, Akshbarko pays you back so quickly, amazing. Anyway, he takes it, thank you so much, he goes home, and he tells people about it, and the story gets round, and he also gets round to the owner of the roof. And he hears about the story, and he goes round to the fellow, and he says, excuse me, this is my roof, it's mine, you have to give it to me. And he says, what do you mean? I rented it off you. And he goes, no, he wasn't having any of it. Now, you know, we're talking about hundreds of thousands of pounds worth of stuff. So he says, well, I'm taking you to court. He takes him to court. And he comes in, and the judge says, you know, have you got anything to say? He says, yeah, yes, I've got something to say. I rented this roof off him, so it was mine at the time when I found it. And the judge says, I'm very sorry, but if you know, anyone can come and claim that you've rented the roof. Unless you have a very clear signed document from a reputable lawyer, then I'm sorry, there's nothing we can do. And it goes back. And he says, well, actually, just happens to be that I have a very clearly signed document, a contract, and he takes out his contract, and he gives it to the judge, and the judge says, yeah, okay, this is a legally binding contract, and therefore it belongs to you, and the jewels belong to him. So, amazing story that not only it came out for the good, but all the things on the way, the trial, the difficulties that he thought were a problem, ended up being his good fortune. So, it wasn't that despite the difficulties, it all worked out for the best. It was because of the difficulties, because of what he endured. He had to go through those things in order for it to come out good for him. So that's the idea. At Surah Tommy Polo, we trust Hashem that we don't understand the whole picture, but sometimes things seem strange and we don't understand them. Why is this going on? But we have to remember, it's not despite the difficulties, because of the difficulties, things turn out in the end. I wish you all a good Shabbos and a good Yom Tov. Right. Right.